Okay, and welcome back, hour number three. Glad you're along tonight. It's just every day. It's just something new and fun. I guess that's how to phrase it. Dr. Henry Nyman is with us as always. Henry, welcome back.
Good to be back, Jeff. And yeah, there's new developments on a daily basis. I agree.
Oh yeah. So you've called the White House to register your support for Trump's war on social media now, right? Because they dared fact-check two of his tweets. Good Lord. I mean, he can't. What he's doing is clearly illegal, according to Judge Knapp and others. This will end up in the Supreme Court. Look, I'm no fan of social media, but his motive is so lame-brained and self-serving and transparently so, it's not funny. It's ugly. It's ugly stuff.
And it was more of a statement than anything else. There really wasn't anything on what he threatens, but I don't think that it's even going to go anywhere. Legally, he can't change laws. I mean, this is... They've got this protection based upon a law passed by Congress, so he can't do an executive action and overturn a law that's been passed. And it's
showbiz. More showbiz.
Right. It was more of a speech than it was an executive action to moan and groan and to say, well, be careful, you know, I'll go and do something. This is just a shot across the bow kind of thing.
And, exactly.
It's just distraction. He didn't want to talk about the 100,000 dead and the projections, I guess, to go up to 130,000, 30-something by August. And he's worried about his convention. He's going to change it to... Florida. I thought he was going to do Tampa. I thought.
Has he decided to go to Florida? I don't know this.
No, he talked. He talked about Tampa, and then Tampa says, "Oh, we can't guarantee we're going to allow you to have 60,000 or 50,000 people at a convention in the middle of the end of August. That would be crazy. Yeah. So I don't know that it's moving anywhere. I'm not even sure that it's going to happen. I mean, this is Jonestown all over again if it happens. I anticipate by late August that it's going to be pretty alarming out there as to exactly what's going on with the virus. Today, the number of new cases jumped. Again, it's like 24,000 new cases today. The death rate is a little bit lower than it was. It's around 1,300, and it was 1,400 yesterday, or 1,350. Mm-hmm. So it's close to where it was. It had fallen from 2,000 to 1,500. So it's still kind of hovering around the 1,500, at least during the week. It slows down over the weekend. But 24,000 cases today is, that's a pretty hefty number. It was 17,000 yesterday, and it's been hanging around that level, 18,000 over the weekend. But 24,000, it's somewhat broken up because the states are starting to say, whether the positive is based on PCR or based on an antibody test.
Antibodies, right. Which 50%, we'll say 50%. The antibody test is spurious. It shouldn't be used.
They're just using that to lower the fatality rate because, the way the antibody test was used in the past was for cases where they have all the symptoms. It looks like they've got. They used it for SARS. It looked like they had SARS, but
they had the same kind of antibody test back then for SARS. Same idea?
Yeah, they do it for H5N1, for avian influenza. It's all the same thing. And those are because they normally do a nasopharyngeal swab, and that's where the virus is initially, and then if it goes to the lower respiratory tract into the lungs, the virus is frequently cleared from the upper respiratory tract. So if they do a nasopharyngeal swab, they're negative because all the virus is now down in the lung. So sometimes they can get a positive for the virus bronchial lavage. But if they can't get that, then the alternative is, a few weeks later, they do an antibody test and see if they're positive for the antibodies. So if they're positive for the antibody, that meant that the symptoms they had are from the virus, even though they can't pick up the virus in the upper respiratory tract. So it was more of a confirmatory lab test to confirm that the patient actually had the virus, even though the nasopharyngeal swab was negative. And
they call this a nasopharyngeal swab, Henry. It almost—I've watched enough of these now. It almost looks like a nasal cranial swab. Hey, that thing goes way in there. Jeez.
No, I know. It's very uncomfortable. I had it done for swine flu, and it's not. It does go way deep. And
it's like a magic act.
It's still the upper respiratory tract. So if the virus is in your lung, or in this case, this virus can go to all kinds of organs, that you can have the symptoms in those other organs and have the swab be negative. A lot of these states, they're just padding their numbers because they're basically taking antibody tests from people that are contacts, or they're people that have very mild symptoms and they just kind of know whether they've got the virus. And those people aren't going in the hospital and they're not dying. So, the more of those they get, the lower their CFR is, because they're not even hospitalized. So they go, we tested 50,000 and we only have 2,000 deaths. But that's because half of the 50,000 is due to antibody tests. So they really only get 25,000 that if they actually had the virus at the time of the test. So it's kind of a so they're starting to divide those up, and I haven't really distinguished. I've just been number positive that the state has listed for the positives, and prior to a week or two ago, they didn't even have them divided up, so you really didn't know how many came from each type of assay. Now, there were complaints that they're all together and you can't really tell what's going on. So now they're starting to list them separately. And they're all over the ballpark as far as what those ratios are. I mean, some started doing the antibody test fairly recently, so the vast majority of them are PCR, and others basically weren't doing that much testing, so they've got low PCR numbers. And to get their numbers up, they just did a whole bunch of antibody tests, and so they've got a high percentage of the positives are antibody tests, and they look like they don't have that much of a frequency for the actual case fatality rate, because they don't have that many deaths because they didn't do that much testing. And the way to get around the testing part is, what I talked about yesterday with the excessive deaths based on death certificates. And I went through those. There's several states that have a fair number of deaths that look like they're they should have a whole lot more confirmed cases. So it's a way to double check them. And I haven't put them all together in a table yet, but the ones that have the highest numbers are the ones that have the known outbreaks that were large. And they have this, other than New York City, they're just broken down by weekly numbers big outbreak, like Chicago's got a big outbreak, but the number is for the whole state of Illinois, and same thing with New Orleans and the whole state of Louisiana. So they're very dramatic if you look at those individual states. But then you can look at other ones that are just now starting to go up, like Maryland or Virginia. And they've had deaths for a while. I mean, I think they're seeing more now because they've increased their testing. But these excess deaths are delayed because they need to have a death certificate issued and on file, and then call it in or mail it in, probably email it in. And so there's a delay. They say it's average of 10 days, but sometimes it could be significantly longer than that. So they've got numbers going through like May 9th or so is how far they go. They don't really list the last couple of weeks because it's all very incomplete. And they give you a warning that, the more recent ones are probably not complete either. Like 60% of the states get their numbers in within 10 days, and the rest is kind of lag. But in any event, that's one way you can kind of catch which states are doing some underrepresentations. But the other thing that comes out when you look at those is some states really don't have that many excess deaths yet. And that's the reason, I've said this several times, I'll just say it one more time. This is really just the herald wave. This is not what it's going to be like in the fall, where the virus is everywhere. Right now, the virus, there's some virus in every state, but a lot of these states is really still at a relatively low level, and they don't even show up.
Well, we're talking 1%. 1% is common.
Right, but there's a big difference state to state, is what I'm saying. So you can go through. Okay. And you can get 10 or 15 states, and you can say, oh, it looks like there's a lot of deaths because of this outbreak. And then you go to another 10 or 15, and you say, well, it looks like there's not a whole lot more than there is on a bad flu year. There's not that many deaths. And that's because the virus really hasn't gotten established there yet. And that's what happens when it gets rolling at the beginning, but once it's kind of been established and been in the new species for several months, then it starts to spread, and then you have every state. If you take a look at it, you can see the excess deaths, and it won't be 100,000 dead in the fall. It'll be, it could be 10 times that amount. So the fall is going to be a disaster. And I actually got a little bit more information. I had mentioned an acquaintance that, appears to have been infected twice now, and his family's been infected now. And, there have been more developments. I got a little bit more specifics on what the testing looked like. And,
all right.
The index case is relatively young. He's in his 20s, so this is not somebody that's 65. But he is in the hospital right now, and here's a little bit more of the background and refresher that he initially was infected at the beginning of April, and he had a cough for a couple of days. He tested. He was PCR positive, and then his sister was tested. She was positive, but she was asymptomatic, and his mother was positive, and she didn't have a lot of symptoms, just had coughs. And then everything kind of resolved a week or two into April, and he's in upstate New York, so it's relatively easy to be tested there. And and then the New York came out with their antibody test. So he went to see if he, what kind of titer he had, because in New York, they don't just tell you whether you're positive or not. They actually give you the titer. And he had just a moderate titer, you know, a relatively low titer. He had a titer of about 80. And 80 is kind of borderline-ish. But, you know, as the antibody test goes, it increases over time. So if you do the antibody test 2 or 3 weeks after you're infected, you're not really at your peak level yet. And I told them that, well, you know, 80 is not really all that high, but maybe they just tested you a little bit too early. And he said, it's easy to get these tests. I'll just go back and get another antibody test and see if it's gone up. And and so I went to get a second antibody test, and they said, well, if you're going to come in and we're going to draw blood to do the antibody, we should just go ahead and swab you again. You know, that's what we're, you know, the protocol is to make sure
the nasal cranial swab.
Virus.
Good.
Right, right. And he did that. And then he called me up and says, he's positive for the virus again. And this was about a week ago or so. And, I said, well, how much virus do you have? Because, you know, there's been these stories that the people test positive long after the fact, and the virus that they've got is really, you know, just the RNA left over, and they're not infectious, and they're not really reinfected. They're essentially still have residual RNA, and so they test positive on the PCR, but it's dead virus that's left over from the original infection. And he said, well, no, it's a pretty good level. It's a moderate to high level. And they can basically get an approximation of how much viral load is based upon how quickly the PCR reaction gets to the level that says positive. So if you start out with a lot of RNA, a high viral load, then it doesn't take very long that you register a positive. And if it goes quick like that, that indicates you got a pretty high level. So he had a pretty high level. And I said, well, yeah, you can tell whether it's a new infection or not from the antibody test, because if you do the antibody test, and they do both IgG and IgM, the IgM is the initial response. And so if you're positive for IgM, that means it's a recent infection. And he did both of those, and he was IgM positive, and he was IgG positive, and that indicated that this isn't from back at the beginning of April. This is a brand new test. And he says, oh, I probably got it when I went to Buffalo over the weekend. And I went to the Walmart, and he had a mask, and he wiped things down, but he apparently got infected going to the Walmart anyway. And then
I went into Walmart here, Henry, and virtually nobody had masks. I'd say I saw five or six customers with masks. That's it. The staff did, but no customers.
I'm not sure what they had in the Walmart, but I do know that in Buffalo they did have a new outbreak. So there was activity there. You know, there were new cases that were showing up when he went, and so he said, you know, he must have gotten it at the Walmart, and he's going to go and since he just got it, he was still asymptomatic, and he had this moderate level of RNA, and he said, well, I'm going to go and get another RNA test to see if since I've only had it for a few days, I'm not really symptomatic yet, whether the numbers it's going down. And he got another test, and the number went up. It was going up. So it was still, you know, on the rise. And I told him, well, you know, if you've got that high of an RNA level, you know, your mother and sister are probably at risk. And And he says, okay, well, I'll go and get them tested too. And so they got tested and they were positive. And so all three of them had been infected at the beginning of April. They all recovered and they all cleared. And then he got infected again like a week and a half ago now. And then he infected his mother and sister again. And so it was that whole scenario was of interest because it would indicate that he infected his family when he was asymptomatic.
Right.
And it also indicated that he had a high level of virus when he was asymptomatic and that he was still, the viral load was still increasing. And so it was of interest that indicated not only could he get infected twice, but his sister and mother could also be infected twice. And he was the source, at least for the second time, and then I basically didn't hear from him yesterday, and I got a text, and he says, "I'm in the hospital." It's got a picture of him sitting in bed in the hospital, and I said, "Oh, what happened?" And well, he had neurological problems. I'm not going to go into details, but anyway, he was hospitalized, and he's on.
Even though he was asymptomatic, we're still saying he had neurological problems. Well, that's sort of symptomatic, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I skipped a step. He was asymptomatic initially, and then his RNA level kept on going up, and his mother and sister tested positive, and then he did develop a cough. So he went from asymptomatic, and then once they tested positive, then he developed a cough. But the cough only lasted like a day or so. You know, and so he so 2 days ago he was already getting better. Did the cough? I mean, I talked to him, and his cough was terrible. Like 3 days ago, and then 2 days ago, he said he was feeling much better.
Right.
And then after the cough, he was he had neurological issues and ended up going in the ER.
And this is how old is this fellow again?
He's in his 20s, late 20s.
And
right. And so now they've got him on remdesivir. He's going to be in the hospital for at least three more days. And his neurological symptoms are resolving. They're doing PCRs on him multiple times a day. His viral load is starting to go down. And hopefully he'll be out in a few days. And but the point, and he does have the Italian lineage. So they did sequence the virus from him already. And it raises another serious question. And that is, it's not clear what lineage he was initially infected with, because, they didn't say that. They went, they looked and tried to see if there's any sample available to get a sequence out of that, but that wasn't available anymore. And so it's not clear if he had another strain initially and now has the Italian strain, or if he just didn't have that strong of response to the initial infection, and that led to a subsequent infection. But the reason that's concerning is, even though he was infected and not that long ago, a month earlier, he ended up with a very high viral load, in spite of the fact that he already should have some resistance because he's been infected. So he's got a high viral load. And the possibility is that the reason he's got a high viral load is because there's this antibody enhancement, because he basically had antibodies from the first infection, but they weren't that effective. And as a result, they ended up enhancing the ability of the virus to cause infections and gave a high viral load. And that high viral load and increased ability to infect other cells led to the neurological issues. And so that's got implications.
Okay. Let's get to the punchline on this. We got halfway through already here.
It's got implications for the vaccine, because virtually all of the companies that are making the vaccine are using the original Wuhan strain. And
The ORF8 strain?
No, before that. The one without
even before that. Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah. They would have got that, you know, directly from China, you know, as soon as it was available, and they started making a vaccine. So all the ones that are out front that are going to have a vaccine in trials already, and if it works in trials, then they'll be available first, have that original reference sequence that was one of the first sequences that came out of Wuhan, and it didn't have any of these changes. And then since then, there's the ORF8 one, which is called the S-clade. And then there's another one that went in Iran, which is called the V-clade. And then there's the Italian version, which is the G-clade. And actually, the G-clade is so big that it's already divided up into three different clades. There's G, which was the original one, and then there's GR, because it's got another mutation in the N gene that changes position.
So what you're saying here in summary is they're working on a vaccine for a viral type that really is not even a player anymore. It's gone.
Right. It's the numbers, just to give you an idea how this sorts out. That at GSAD, there's like 29,000 full genomes that they've got classified. And out of those, the original strain, which they're designating the L-clade, there's 2,390 sequences. And then the S-clade, which is the one with the ORF8, that's got almost exactly the same number, 2,367. Mm-hmm. And then the V-clade also has almost exactly the same number. That's got 2,374. And then there's the 3G clade, and all three of them have this change in the S gene. So they all have this one change in this immunodominant region of the S gene, and they've all changed position to 614 from a D to a G. That's what they call the G clade. And so the original G clade, there's 6,700, so it's almost three times what there is for each of the other ones. And then the one that added this R mutation, this DR, that's got 7,497, so that's got almost four times as many. And then GH has got 6,500, so it's got almost three times as many. So the three G clades together, all of which have the same change in the S gene, are 10 times more prevalent than any of the other other three clades. So they've dominated, and they're all over the place. And so in all likelihood, by the end of the year, the Italian strain will be everywhere. And even if it evolves further, it'll probably have the same change in the S gene. And therefore, you may end up with the same issue, that if you were initially infected with either the S, the L, or the V clade, which were the earlier ones, then because it doesn't, none of them will have this change in the spike protein, the S gene, then they may end up with the same type of antibody enhancement. So the immunization with the early version may give you immunity to the early version, which is pretty much gone, as he said. And it may lead to enhancement, so the Italian version will end up growing to a high viral load, is what happened to this person. So that's sitting out there on the horizon. So people that either already have been infected or with one of the other plates, you know, early on, or people potentially, they get vaccinated with the early strain, with the original strain, will be in the position where infection again with the Italian version or some evolved version of the Italian lineage will actually end up with a higher viral and have all of these potential issues. I mean, in this case, he had an issue with neurological, other ones will have issues with them.
Well, this is further evidence that this virus does exact damage in a number of different venues within the body. It doesn't follow a really strict pattern at all.
All of these have that polybasic plebiscite.
Right.
All of them can go into many different cell types and cause different types of problems.
Bad virus.
And along the same lines, his neurological issues may be related to the immune response against the virus. So when the virus grows to high viral loads and you're relatively young and have a very robust immune system, then your body goes into overdrive. Your
cytokine
system goes into overdrive.
Cytokine storm.
And so you end up having damage
attacking
to these
different your own
organs
body.
It's really based upon your immune response. And so that's why, you know, the idea, well, let's let this virus run and see what happens, may not be the best strategy. This virus is going to be a problem.
I kind of think,
it's not an epidemic. This is a pandemic. This virus is everywhere.
I think what you've said a long time ago, this virus doesn't care, and I do think it's going to run through, period. It's just going to run through. And there's not a whole lot we can do to stop. We can slow it, we can flatten the curve, but we're just, by flattening the curve, some suggest we're extending the length of the damage here. Just we're spreading it out more. Here are a couple of quickies. White House says Donald Trump would take hydroxychloroquine again. Another one. Trump camp tries to remove a satirical cartoon from an online retailer. I'll send you this cartoon. You'll like it. It was in the Guardian. And you've seen it? Have you seen this one?
I didn't see it, but I mean, on what grounds? That it looks like him?
Because it's apparently offensive to him. Orange man, and he's got a big vat in front of him, a big metal pot, and it says Kool-Aid, and there's a red line through that, it's crossed out, chloroquine, crossed out, and then it says Clorox, and it's not crossed out, and he's got a ladle, and he's handling it and handing it out to MAGA hat-wearing people with mugs ready to drink up. And he didn't like that.
That's the one he wants removed?
Yep.
Oh, that one's right on the money. Why would anybody remove that?
I can't imagine.
It's too close to reality.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, that's That's what the problem is. The problem is he would take all of those, because none of those have anything to do with science. This is all hocus pocus stuff that, you know, somebody is desperate to try to take that because they just are grasping at straws for something that's going to work.
That's right.
And they don't.
That's right.
And they have no idea what to do. So somebody says, "Hey, I heard about this," you know, and they got these testimonials. Oh, 100% of my cases, you know, they all recover, and da 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 da. And France has already banned it. I mean, that's where it was supposed to have started. It was a hydroxychloroquine. That was the first study, and now France won't use it anymore, and WHO won't use it anymore. And Donald's got a lot of inventory, so he's out peddling. He said, "Hey, here you go.
I'd take it again.
Look at it. It worked.
Better prepare.
I didn't get the virus, and I didn't even need a mask. You know, all I needed was a little hydroxy."
Oh, that's right.
And it works like a charm. But I mean, just about everything he does is just anti-science. I mean, the mask and creating it, you know, politicizing it and going and mocking reporters who are wearing it. And that's, there's really no reason not to wear the mask. I mean, you can argue that maybe you should have an N95 instead of a cloth mask, because that way you get protection as well as you're protecting others. But the idea of not wearing a mask when you've got a highly infectious agent and it can be passed by asymptomatic, and I think the asymptomatic role is going to become increasingly important because apparently there's multiple people with his acquaintance. He said that there are several that are in the hospital that have a similar situation to
right.
him. And I'm not sure if that is related to neurological.
Here are a few more quickies here. A couple more. Let's put some more out here. Washington Governor Jay Inslee said Trump should be removed from office for his disastrous coronavirus response. As deaths top 100,000, Trump's task force is curtailed. He's cutting it back. Another one. Why the Trump-Kushner warp speed coronavirus vaccine effort is dangerous and likely to fail. This is an article from Vanity Fair. 555 workers at Tyson Foods plant in Iowa positive for coronavirus. Blood clots fill lungs of black coronavirus victims. Nearly 300 healthcare workers have now died from coronavirus around the country. That's the current count. 98% of coronavirus deaths in Massachusetts all had underlying health problems. Another one. CDC admits that coronavirus is almost impossible to die from. Now, this is a YouTube video.
I haven't been able to go.
I'm just going down a list here.
That's a good example. That example is what really stands out because, like I said, you can look at the raw data. You can look at doesn't matter what the diagnosis was, doesn't matter whether they were tested or not. All you got to look and see, are they dead? And do they have a death certificate? And if the answer is yes, you can look at those charts state by state and actually country by country. The same things happen in Europe. Same thing happened in Russia. I mean, Russia is trying to say their death rate is 10% of the rest of the world because they've got all these cases that have died from all these other things that have been just saying, well, you know, it just so happened to have the virus, but they really died from a heart attack or they really died from kidney failure. Or they really died from such and such, and all of those other ailments are at record levels because they just so happen to also have the virus. And so, I mean, this is just objective fact. You just take a look at who died, when did they die, and if you take a look for the United States, they all died in March and April. If you look at flu, the peaks for flu were in January or February. They don't even overlap. You just have this brand new peak all by itself. It's much higher than flu, and there's no overlap. When there was all this SARS-CoV floating around, and these guys are writing an article that says the virus doesn't kill when there's 100,000 that are dead, which is an underestimate. There's about 130,000 that are dead just in the United States.
Here's one from an Israeli scientist that I need you to comment on. COVID-19 immunity lasts only 6 months, and reinfection is possible. Since there is no treatment or vaccine for the novel coronavirus, the only way to stop its spread is through social distancing and good hygiene. This is a story out of the Jerusalem Post.
Yeah, well, the guy I had, it didn't even last 6 weeks.
Not even 6 weeks. No.
Right,
no.
Right.
So there's one. Here's another one from Russia. No hope for herd immunity following antibodies survey, scientist says. This is from TASS. No hope for herd immunity.
Well, they've got it all over there. And that's why I say they acknowledge the high number of cases and they deny the high number of deaths. But they have record high number of deaths and all of these other diagnoses that they're saying is what they really died from. So, I mean, the people are still dead and they still died when there's this big outbreak of...
Now they're not reviving many of them, are they?
But they're saying they didn't die from the virus. And I mean, you've got the same thing going on in Brazil. They're not denying that they died from the virus. They're just not testing so that the number of deaths is a gross undercount there. And they're calling it the little flu or something like that. And that's going to just run rampant. And exactly what those numbers are. And it's not a coincidence that... Brazil is now number two. Brazil is already past Russia.
Right.
So U.S. is number one. U.S. is number one. Brazil is number two. Russia's number three. And U.K. with Boris Johnson is number four. Or some actually have Spain in front, but U.K. is gaining. So one way or
what do they call Bolsonaro in Brazil? They call him the Latin Trump or something like that?
Something
Bolsonaro.
Like that. Some kind of Trump. It's a Latin American Trump or something. Whatever it is.
Yeah, here's another goodie. A postcard mailed from the Trump administration to every American household that included social distancing guidelines and also prominently featured President Donald Trump's name cost the U.S. Postal Service $28 million to deliver.
Yeah.
USA Today story. Another re-election card.
Checks too. He did the same thing.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Oh, yeah. He's not missing any opportunity to put his name out there and hopefully what he thinks is a positive spin. The coronavirus card, which began appearing in U.S. mailboxes in March, drew fire from good government groups that said it applied a political veneer to the administration's effort to inform Americans about the pandemic. Yes, of course. So these it's pretty morbid. And here's a picture of Trump with his executive order holding it open with his that bizarre signature of his. Anyhow, he must have gone to study on that one somewhere. After a silence, Trump notes the 100,000 U.S. coronavirus deaths in a tweet and then blames China again for it all.
Right.
So predictable.
Right. And I mean, what is the logic behind that anyway? I mean,
I don't know.
They could have stopped it, but they didn't because of what? They want to see how many people they could kill and how they could destroy their economy.
You got me.
I mean, it started in China. The fact that we have more cases than anybody in the world, and it started about as far away from the United States as you can get.
Yeah.
It's literally on the other side of the world.
Two oceans away.
Right. It came across both of them, but it had across the ocean, whether it was from the east or the west. And
got two good questions for you here.
Yeah.
From emailers.
Yeah.
All right. Here's let's do this. I think we can do this one quicker. I want to get both of them in here. Zachary writes in. To what degree does Dr. Nyman believe that toilet plume, aerosolized micro droplets, the toilet plume is playing in the continuous spread of coronavirus, i.e. the Walmart guy he described as getting infected in Buffalo, New York, and reinfecting his family by using a shared bathroom? So you got somebody in a house who's isolated, allegedly has their own bathroom, but they're still aerosolizing the atmosphere in the home. That's possible. What do you think?
Right. Yeah, it's possible. It's not the only way, and it's very difficult to control it when you're in the same house. If you're in the same house, you're almost definitely going to get infected.
Well, 66% of New York got infected by allegedly staying home. So there it is. One person was infected.
Right, that's just based on what they were doing. They don't know where they got infected.
I think Zachary raises a good point.
They weren't an essential worker. Right, but I mean, that's kind of one of these general things. It could have. And there's
it's something you want to keep in mind. Keep the lid down when you flush the toilet. If you've got a fan up on the ceiling, turn it on, close the door, let the thing at least try and pull those aerosolized micro droplets from whoever uses a toilet. Get them out of there. Open a window. Just be smart.
Right.
Here's the other question. This is from Ryan for Sports Lovers. NHL, NBA, and Major League Baseball plan to resume with no fans. They plan on playing in a few cities as hubs and players staying in hotels and not leaving or traveling. That's strange, but that's what their plan is. Does Henry think if one player tests positive, they will just shut the leagues back down again? The Pittsburgh Steelers for the NFL this fall are selling only one half of their stadiums in season tickets. They plan on having some fans. Does Henry think even without fans, they won't be playing very long, any of the major league sports?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think the same thing will happen to the major league sports once they resume. It has happened to shut them down. They'll get more than one player that's infected. They'll have multiple players infected.
Oh, half the team will get infected in a few days.
They'll know that if they continue, it's just going to get worse. And this idea that they're going to play to stadiums that are a quarter or a half full of fans, and that's going to prevent spread is just crazy. Because one of the best ways to spread the virus is to yell and scream. They go to the game to cheer their team on. That's the best way to spread
the virus
about it.
They're spewing. They're all like individual sprayers,
right,
each one.
Right. And so the idea that, the stadium's only quarter, half full, and then what are they going to do when they want to go to the refreshment stand? Or what are they going to do when they have to go to the bathroom? And how are they going to space those out? They're going to end up You take a break at halftime and then come in for the final two minutes.
Here's the hard science of aerosolized contact. When you're in a room or a space where there's no wind blowing and you simply exhale, that will travel and disturb the air and carry particulates up to 17 feet. That's the truth. That's science. So the 6 feet thing, silly. That's not how it works. But if you're going to get a mask, get an N95. I've seen people with masks often, Henry, and you can look right in the side of the mask and see their nose. You can see their mouth. It's silly. Silly. So anyhow, there it is. All right. We'll wrap it up tomorrow night. We'll see what more mania emanates from the White House between tomorrow and right now. Thank you, Henry.
Well, the mania level is directly proportional to the poll numbers. So if he's still down in the polls, the mania will only go up.
Okay. Well said.
See you tomorrow. Okay.
You got it. All right. There goes Dr. Henry Nyman. And thanks to all of you for being here. We will be right back with you tomorrow night. And in the meantime, you know where you can find us. And we're putting stories up all night long. Talk to you tomorrow.